Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Real Normal Podcast. Just to let you know, we recorded this podcast on Saturday, the 26th of June. About 6 hours after we recorded it, Matt Hancock withdrew his sloppy, horrible, moist fingers from the orifice of power and resigned as Health Secretary in the UK, with Sajid Javid taking his place. We won't be talking about that in this week's podcast because we don't own a DeLorean that does 85 miles an hour. Anyway, let's get on with the podcast, guys. Hope you enjoy it. Right then, everyone, welcome back to the Real Normal Podcast. Lord Rickmansworth here, back with a new member to the party. Don, do you want to tell everyone what happened to Midge? What's wrong with Midge at the moment?
He's had a bit of a medical issue.
He was very scratchy, wasn't he? He was scratching his crotch quite a lot.
Midge, I just hope that cream works.
I mean, has he been eating a lot of yeasty food lately? But yeah, no, Midge will be back next week. But in his stead, he's actually a long-time listener to the podcast. Has been emailing us a few times. He owns a haulage company. Does he? Joined by Eddie Stobart, the doppelganger.
Welcome, Eddie.
Good morning, chaps.
Tell the listeners, what's your story? You aren't obviously a haulage expert, are you? You've just got the same name.
No, I'm 32. I'm got dark hair, brown eyes, and all the stuff.
This isn't a dating.
I run. I've got a small construction recruitment company. I say small, it's just me, so I work for myself, basically.
It's very small.
To be fair, I've been quite lucky, actually, because the construction industry is usually during recessions, it's the first one to go. But yeah, this during the last year, it's actually kind of held up a lot, the economy. Between April and September last year, it was quiet because everyone was on furlough.
I mean, after about 3 or 4 weeks, everyone started going back in again, didn't they, quite quickly?
Well, some of the construction companies wanted to close their sites. It was a bit of a virtue signal to be like, we're doing the right thing. But after 2 weeks, they went, right, we've got to open them again.
Yeah,
we can't
afford to
keep them closed.
So, I mean, what have you found like the, I mean, you know, all these offices, places where people work, all that sort of thing, they've got all their screens up and all the rest of it. What's the safety like on construction sites at the moment?
Companies have kind of done what they have to do to put certain things in place, whether it's, you know, more PPE and scrap. I mean, they used to PPE anyway, to be fair. And
yeah,
they originally tried to do a social distancing thing on site, which went down like a lead balloon because it was impossible.
And well, yeah. I mean, you know, you've got apprentices, you've got to beat them up somehow.
Thing is, though, the construction industry is quite they're usually quite a common sense industry. So a lot of people have got on with things without being too bogged down with all of the red tape that's kind of engulfed everyone's life. So, which has been quite refreshing for me because a lot of my clients, I don't talk too much about what's happened over the last year, but when it's brought up, a lot of people do seem to say, it's like a bollocks, this, isn't it?
Yeah. it has been getting like that, hasn't it?
Yeah,
for all of us,
I think so.
I mean, I said to Eddie here, he's going to get the creme de menthe when it comes to subjects today because we often plan, it doesn't sound like it, but we do actually plan these podcasts.
Do we? Why? No one ever tell me.
And I was very good to see that Eddie turned up with some notes. So yeah, the creme de menthe moment that we're going to go into after this very quick break when we start the podcast, it's going to be, well, why don't you tell us, Eddie?
Mr. Hancock.
Surely not.
And his naughty mouth.
Mr. Hancock.
He's naughty everything.
Mr. Hancock and his massive knob. I've heard he's got a huge cock. Well, I think maybe I just heard he was a huge cock.
Yeah. He's a walking cock.
Well, while the music...
He's definitely punching, though.
While we taper the music back in, I'd just like all our listeners to close their eyes. Just imagine Matt Hancock's cum face, and then we'll get on with the podcast.
It's just to look at that smug grin can be wiped off his face, because I think that's one of the things that's probably annoyed me the most about him, is just how smuggy that he's looked over the last year when everyone else is suffering and losing their jobs and all the other bits and pieces.
But one of the questions like we can get our head round is, like, if you're going to have an affair with someone, why would you choose Matt Hancock?
Everyone's got their
an aphrodisiac, they say.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
And he's quite a powerful, he's clearly a very powerful person in the grand scheme of things.
So, Eddie, Matt Hancock, what's happened? I'm sure everyone out there knows, but give us what you got. I've got some bits as well to add.
Yeah, no, I think this is going to be a bit of a team effort as well, because I think we've all got some things to say about this. What's happened with Mr. Matt Handjob? Well, he has been caught in canoodling and a bit of arse grabbing as well.
That's real sort of fifth form arse grabbing, wasn't it?
It was like that scene in the Inbetweeners when he gets wanked off but on the wall. It's that kind of fumbling around.
I imagine a little knee slide on the parquet floor in front of the disco before it happened.
I hadn't seen the video until you sent it to me last night, and it's really
so
toe curling, isn't it?
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah, it is. He sort of looks out the door, doesn't he? Is anyone coming?
By the door, yeah.
He's like, is anyone coming? Because I'm going to be in a minute.
Come here, you lucky, lucky lady.
What is it Alan Partridge says? He goes, which one of you lovely ladies are going to make love to you in a minute? And Lynn's like, oh. So, yeah, he was caught on, well, it looks like what I call it very positive Spanish television, CCTV. Yes.
She's just going downhill rapidly.
There's going to be a lot more of these, aren't there?
Yeah. CCTV.
There's the question of where the video came from. We'll talk about that in a bit, I think. He's got a lot of enemies there, though, I think, hasn't he? He's made a lot of enemies over the last year.
So. Yeah, yeah. And I think the Sun, who broke the story, they've apparently got more on him. Apparently, yeah, they're keeping their powder dry, I think.
Well, there's ones of him out dinner with her and, you know...
You can take a co-worker out for dinner and get pissed up. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know...
I don't think, though, I don't really care about the... He's had enough I don't care. He can do what he wants with his bits and pieces. The big issues here are firstly the nepotism that's been really rife with him in terms of giving contracts to everyone that seems to be mates with him or is in his family.
Well, I mean, there's definitely a little bit of that going on here, isn't there? I mean, is her brother, isn't it?
Her brother, so Roberto Calatangelo, I think it is. He's a director of PHL Group. He's on Company's House, so he's actually a director. They provide urgent and primary care services to NHS patients. They've got quite a lot of contracts with the NHS. Now, we don't know what those values are of the contracts and what the contracts are, and especially if they've been awarded by the Department of Health and Social Care, because that would be a real red flag if they had been.
Yeah.
They've claimed they've been working with the NHS for the last 11 years.
Yeah.
He's been a director since October 2019. I think that's when she was brought in to start working with
him. But there's also the fact that she went to uni with Matt, did PPE,
she's got no qualifications to really be doing the position she's been doing.
How did she get that position?
Was it 15 grand a year they get? It's supposed to get vetted. Her position was supposed to get vetted by the civil service. Yeah. And I'm not sure that's happened yet.
She's also a non-exec member of the Department of Health and Social Care Board. Mm. So she actually is on the board that scrutinises the department. She's not just an advisor, you know, giving a bit of advice every now and again. She's also been very close, well, more ways than one with Hancock, but she's been joined at the hip with him for a long time. So, you know, the affair could have come out of them working closely together, to be fair. I think, the affair is the issue to a degree in terms of the hypocrisy, and we'll get onto that in a minute, but I think just in terms of that relationship now, that's a big conflict of interest in its own right, and I think the brother thing has to be looked into a lot more, because that's a lot of red flags.
Well, I mean, looking at what she actually does as well, outside of her position within government, because let's face it, she's got a position within government,
she's
isn't
a communications
she?
Director, isn't she?
Yeah,
she's a position again, on her knees, is
I always think now, when he's standing at that podium, if you could sort of...
she's like under the Police Academy.
She's under there like... Sorry.
That's why he always looks a bit flustered.
She's head of marketing for... she works at Luther Pendragon that do PR, right? Mm. One of the things they do PR for is crisis and reputation management.
Well, there you go.
So she's just got a new client, hasn't she?
This is the bit I love. They also offer clients a deep understanding of the mechanics of government. And I thought, that's...
I saw that as well. One of the things as a business that this particular company are really happy about is the Stay Home, Protect the NHS campaign. It's been one of the most successful, they say. A survey from the University of Sheffield suggests that 85 to 90% of the population are complying with social distancing all of the time. Well, that's not what they're doing, is it? Their campaign made people not go to the hospital when they were ill.
Yeah, there was that awful case with I think it was on Julie Hartley Brewer's show where there was the ex-squaddy whose wife died of cancer because it wasn't another lady who was in the same ward at the same time. She's also died because it wasn't caught early enough, and that was just those are hard, those ones to listen to, aren't they? There's been a few stories like that. Losing businesses,
and there's going to be more and more.
There's probably loads of them, but they haven't. You know, we just don't know about.
But the fact of the matter is, she works for a business that's lauded that technique and approach towards us and how we use our healthcare as being a good thing.
Yeah.
No, plus, she's shagging Matt Hancock. Plus, she's in government. I mean, it stinks, doesn't it?
It does.
The way people are like, it doesn't really matter because it's private life. I'm sorry. When you've got this sort of thing going on.
When there's such a crossover, yeah.
Matt Hancock signed into law the regulations that he broke. And I think what people are really pissed off about is that, but also the fact that the video was shot 10 days before. He then came out and said, well, you can't hug people. You can't have sex with anyone. My view is if you've actually been following those rules, then I think you're a bit of a moron.
I haven't got much sympathy for
you. But in principle...
Well, my wife was really up for all that. She said,
no sex for 14 months.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Well, in terms of the conflicts of interest, I mean, there's a few others to talk about. I mean, I should have moved to West Suffolk and become pally with him because I could have got a £30 million contract then.
Yeah,
couldn't I?
Because his even mate, he was the landlord of the pub, wasn't he?
Yeah, Scott Garlick's born. He was the former landlord of his local pub in his West Suffolk constituency, decided he's obviously left the pub game and set up a company called Himpac, who've had got no track record in the medical goods industry whatsoever. And yet he gives him a £30 million contract to create vials for COVID tests. And then Hancock said, nothing to do with me. And you think, well,
yeah, I mean,
don't,
it's...
you treat us like idiots at the best of times for last year. Don't
particularly when the sort of those photos come out with him arm in arm behind the bar of the pub. And
oh, yeah, of course there was.
Well, they have treated us like that. We're at a point now where the government can just do whatever they like. What do you need to do now in government to get sacked?
Well, this is it. I think the big issue Bob Boris has got now is the fact that, firstly, he's got a slightly colourful personal life anyway, and that puts him in a difficult position.
Well, he's probably jealous of him, isn't he?
He probably, yeah. Probably is, but also,
one that got away.
He's thinking, damn it. And but also, I think there's something to think about with this is the fact that there's no opposition to hold the government to account.
Hold that thought, guys, because what I want you to do at the end of the podcast, right at the end... I want you to think about this now so it gives you a bit of thinking time. Yeah. Put yourselves in the shoes of someone who has got no charisma whatsoever, who's basically a failed politician, hasn't got much longer left. So put yourself in the shoes of Keir Starmer.
He went to my school, he did.
Did he?
Yeah.
He went to school.
Well, think about what would be your first question at next Wednesday's PMQs. Yeah. What would you say if you were Keir Starmer? It'd be very interesting to see what he actually does say. All right, but we'll come back to that at the end of the podcast.
I think something I can't let go is when he generally started crying... Hancock started crying on TV when the first vaccines came out. And he said, quote, it's been such a tough year for so many people. I'm just relieved that people can now get on with their lives. This isn't in December last year. Well, that hasn't happened.
Well, wasn't it? So was it
6 months
all
on?
Over seven, yeah. Once all over 70s have been vaccinated, we're going to be let free again. No, now it's once all over 50s. No, now it's once
all
everyone.
Adults, yeah.
And no, we're not going to bring vaccine passports in. Oh, yes, we are. Last week's interview with Gary Sidley that I didn't put it in the interview, but he said to me, what's the difference between the truth and a conspiracy theory? And I said, I don't know. It was like about 6 months.
So true. Yeah. Again, I mean, I know people that someone whose relationship's broken up over lockdown. I know you have do as well.
Yeah.
And he's got the audacity to say that such a tough year for so many people. He's been on full salary and he's been shagging his right-hand lady, hasn't
he? Not just
he?
That. I mean, do you remember the images of people at a funeral when the old lady was crying?
Oh, that
they
was
moved
awful.
The chairs
yeah.
over to
that
be
was
near.
A low point,
and the
was.
Funeral people were like, I mean, I know Matt Hancock's not the one there doing that, but this is his
policy.
Yeah, his policy.
And he's been at the forefront of, firstly, all the propaganda, and secondly, the pushing lockdown. I did enjoy it. Sorry, someone sent me this, which I did quite enjoy. It said, you can't have a big wedding, but Matt Hancock can shag your wife. Well, that's bang on, isn't
was
it?
Was it saving lives, shagging wives? Yeah. That was one of the ones I saw. So I've got a little list here. This is, I've headed it, Times Wankface told us to stay home and obey. 9th of February, 10 years in jail for COVID returnees. Oh, Hancock announced that people returning from holidays who conceal where they've been to a red list country will face a prison sentence of up to 10 years. We got 1st of February 2021. Don't even think about stretching COVID rules. 10th of January, Hancock claimed that flexing the rules could be fatal. Well, he's been flexing something else, hasn't he? 24th of September 2020, Hancock warned people to be sensible when having sex during lockdown. He's asked about the government's guidance. This was on Sky News with Kay Burley before she got caught fucking breaking the rules as well. Yeah. So he said only established couples should have sex. There have to be boundaries, to coin a phrase. He warned against casual sex, advising the government to stick to well-established relationships and joking, I know I'm in an established relationship with his wife.
That's the one, isn't it?
That is a good one. And 7th of September, young people flouting social distancing could cause a rise in cases. 5th of July, Hancock threatened to shut down non-compliant businesses. 25th of June, Hancock threatened to close the beaches. 6th of May, Hancock said Neil Ferguson was right to resign.
We should touch on that in a minute, because that one was funny, because he actually said that he was right to sign, and what was his other quote? He said, rules are there for everyone and they are deadly serious.
Yeah, so, exactly. I mean,
it's
also
all coming back to haunt
him. You know what?
Yeah.
One of the funny things about that, actually, the deadly serious word, I thought was
clever.
One of those little nudges,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Another psychological nudge. It was. I think something that's come from this as well, which, I mean, we hate hypocrisy in this country, I think, for the most part. And what we can see from this is that politicians don't believe in what they're preaching. It's not just they don't just practice it, they don't believe it. I mean, him walking, do you remember that video of him walking through the 10 Downing Street entrance?
Yeah, taking the mask off.
Yeah. Yeah. But if it was that deadly a virus and they honestly were that concerned, they wouldn't be doing these things.
Like we said before, if we were in the middle of a massive pandemic, we would not be having a football competition. No.
People would be boarding up the windows. There'd be mass rioting. And
yeah, I mean, just to finish on this, I've got a quote from Gina, actually, here. This is from her blog, I believe. I got it picked up of her blog online. But this is what she said, and maybe Matt Hancock has listened to this quote and thought, you know what, I'll do the same. She said, you don't have to do what everyone else is doing. Decide what you want and don't want and stick to it. It's up to you to live a life you love. How about that? Something that Matt Hancock has singularly stopped all of us from doing in this country for the last, 14, 15 months? So, what a fuckhead.
Yeah.
But I do,
that was a good
But I think it will be ironic if him getting caught having an affair is the thing that leads to him having to resign or getting sacked. After everything he's done over the previous 15, 16 months. Yeah. It's like, really, is that going to be the thing?
But he hasn't even got the High Court ruled that he actually acted unlawfully and not revealing details of contracts that have been signed during the pandemic within 30 days, assumedly to try and brush them under the carpet, I think.
Yeah, but there
must have been a lot of them, though, for them to rule to kind of take him to that level. But that was really swept up.
It's just not followed up on.
Laurie, we're in the middle of this huge emergency that's resulted in an all-cause mortality for the year of the same rate as 2009. So, you know.
Bring out your dad.
Where are they?
Yeah.
There does appear that there has apparently been staged because something else is going on. Well, I've been sent a picture, an email that someone's received from the NHS saying that you can now add your vaccine status to the app so you can travel. So that's a vaccine status passport, something that 6 months ago was apparently never going to happen.
Yeah. Verboten.
And also, on the same day, I got a couple of emails through from petitions.gov or petition.parliament.uk, and these are ones that I'd signed. So this one had 355,000 signatures. Do not roll out COVID-19 vaccine passports. The government came back and said the government has suggested such a system based on proof of vaccination or a negative test result could help manage the disease in the future, allowing the economy to reopen and social restrictions to be lifted. It is currently undertaking a review into whether and how such a system could be introduced. Now, one of the things I like, social restrictions could be lifted. Sorry, a vaccine passport is a restriction.
Yeah.
That's a social restriction there. Yeah. And that apparently is now going to happen. There's another one that I got through as well. This had 337,000. Prevent any restrictions on those who refuse a COVID-19 vaccination. Mm-hmm. And this was their reply to that. The government has suggested that such a system, based on proof of vaccination or a negative test result, could help manage the disease in future, allowing the economy to reopen and social restrictions to be lifted.
That's terrifying.
It is currently undertaking a review of whether and how such a system could be introduced.
I've got this sense of deja vu all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's almost like they went Control A, Control C, and then opened this one up and went Control V. There you go.
But what?
For all of you, that's copy and pasting. Copy and pasting for dummies.
Can you imagine now, say, suddenly a general election was called in 3 months' time?
Yeah.
Who the hell would you vote for?
Well, this is...
I haven't got a clue.
Oh, it's got to be reform, isn't it?
But I just don't think I could vote for the Conservatives.
I couldn't vote for them. I couldn't vote for Labour.
Absolutely.
And then you look at what's left and it's like, well...
I mean...
But what's going to happen is you're going to get incredibly low voter turnout.
Yeah.
And the Lib Dems are going to get in through the back door.
Yeah,
that's
Greens.
What's going to happen. All the
Greens will have it.
That's true. That's very true.
Caroline Lucas.
Oh, maybe I will have to vote.
The Greens only want to curfew on men, though, don't they, in the evening?
Yeah,
so,
that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a nice sensible policy that everyone's going to get behind, isn't it?
So, yeah, exactly, because all men who want to go out and rape and kill people are going to adhere to that policy.
Absolutely.
Because they're law-abiding citizens.
Do you know what? I'm going to stay in tonight and have a cup of tea.
Jesus. What are you doing tonight? Oh, I'm going to go and do a bit of raping. Can you imagine it?
No, it's 7 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You just missed the boat.
Damn it.
Caroline Lucas said you can't. Okay, another thing on the old Matt Hancock debacle. We did a poll on Twitter. Who will Matt Hancock's next employer be? The answers were either Pornhub or some club in Prague. 59% want him to work down on Wenceslas Road in... is it Wenceslas?
Wenceslas Square.
Wenceslas Square in Prague.
Or is it Wenceslas?
It did make me realise how beautiful the Club Darlings is down in Prague.
We had...
I lost a shoe in there, actually, once.
Well,
I lost a few other things.
I lost my self-respect in there.
Oh, I lost that a long time ago.
Okay, then. So, after the break, we've got a bit of FUEU with Don. We've got some Stop Funding Hate. A little bit of John Burko and Merkel. Not in the same room together and doing what Matt Hancock was doing. And then also we've got furlough and staff shortages as well. So, come back after the break. And I'll speak to you soon. Love you.
No one loves me. I've been looking for love for such a long time, but during the pandemic, I've not been able to do it. I'm just so, so lonely, and I've seen so many relationships fall apart. because they're not seeing each other. What am I gonna do?
Whoa, you look nice, yeah, pretty little thing. Look a bit lonely. You might recognise me. I'm the health secretary. Some people call me the sexual health secretary. I go by the name Matt Hancock. I'm a massive cock. I have a massive cock. So the ladies tell me in the health department. Oh. Want to reach the climax in an elevator?
Now, Matt, we've only just met. What can you offer me on top of your massive surname that could sweeten the deal?
Don't worry, you pretty little thing. I'll cut right to the hands, space, chase, right now.
If you choose to suck Matt Hancock's knob, you could win yourself a high government position, but it could come with the caveat that you might have to shag Matt Hancock. Maybe give Bozza a blowy in the special room at Downing Street they spent loads of money on, all that lovely rubber wallpaper. If you're game for that and also misleading the entire British public when it comes to COVID restrictions and ignoring them yourself while preaching to everyone else that they should do it, then you know what? You might just fit the bill for Matt Hancock's next mistress. Oh yeah, you might have to tickle the jowls of Michael Gove the odd occasion as well. He likes that, none of us really know why. Whoa, yes, that sounds pretty good, doesn't it? What do you say, you pretty little thing? You know what? I think I'll give it a miss this time, Matt. I just got a WhatsApp from Jizzy Thorbin, so I'm gonna go and see him instead. Thanks, Matt. Toodaloo.
Right, just to let everyone know who's listening at the moment, it's 2 minutes past 12.
So
on,
it is
on a
legal
Saturday afternoon. I'm about to have a beer.
We're not raging alcoholics. We're not raging anyway.
We might be later on.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this beer. It will stop the shaking. So just a little bit of a pointer for everyone. Obviously, we've got our new lad on the block, new man on the block, Eddie's here. And it is customary for biscuits to be supplied. What biscuits did you bring, Eddie?
Bourbon creams.
Boo.
Which was the majority supported. And dark chocolate digestives because...
Because they're the best.
How do you eat your bourbons? Are you a licker or do you split them apart? Are you a cruncher?
I just, like Hancock, I just go straight in.
What, tongue? The end of the tongue. Yeah. Matt Hancock just splits the biscuit in half and licks out the nice, moist centre.
Oh, that's ruined bourbon biscuits for everyone now.
Okay, so we've got a bit of FUEU.
We have.
Because we didn't do one last week, because obviously the interview with Gary Sidley, which I hope you both enjoyed. What did you think? Did you like it?
Oh, is that where you went?
No one's heard from Gary since. He's gone to ground. Cool. Well, look at this. We've got three cans of tribute turning up.
Oh, Christ.
Oh, yeah.
And glasses. How about that?
I like the fact that we've got a real normal pod beer wench.
Yeah, it's my special. It's my special tankard. Here's to Midge's safe recovery.
Yes, missing you, Midge.
And also to Ed's arrival as well.
Bonjour.
Cheers.
I've got a can of tribute here from St. Austell, 4.2%. Nice and cold. Probably a bit too cold, I'd say.
If Lady R could just put them between her thighs for a couple of minutes just to get them up to temperature.
Look at that. Yeah, so how do you eat your bourbons with your beer then?
Afraid bourbons are now not allowed.
As soon as you move on to port scratchings.
Bourbons
now.
And beer. Port scratchings and some dry roasted peanuts. Oh, I love dry roasted peanuts with a pint. Lovely. Yeah, so, well, going back to it, what did you think of the interview with Gary? And get some of your thoughts on it.
I thought it was very good. I thought, he was just, I think it was interesting because his background, he was a chemist by trade, wasn't he, I guess, when he was, and then he moved into...
He got bored, didn't he?
Yeah.
So he was doing...
Sciencey stuff.
Yeah, he said that, exactly that.
He just seemed a very objective clinical psychologist because I think a lot of them have got a real agenda, but he seems like he's very much he's sticking with the science of it, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think, which a lot of them haven't. I mean...
Yeah, the more rounded view of... things.
We're recording this podcast today when there's huge marches going on in London.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And he's down there today. He said to us, are you going to come? I said, right, basically, I can't, mate. I've got stuff on. But also, we're going to be recording the podcast.
Yeah.
So we're doing our little bit for that. We'll be there in spirit. Tell you what, if they extend the lockdown after July the 19th...
We need to be down there,
we'll
I think.
Be going down
yeah,
there,
I
okay?
think so.
So, yeah, Scotland have been knocked out of the EU against their will. And Don has got some stuff for FUEU,
oh,
which we said about 10 minutes ago.
I like that.
Yeah.
UK manufacturing output has soared at the fastest pace on record. The 3 months to June were the strongest quarter since the CBI's survey began back in 1975.
Wow. So is that companies like Nissan and stuff like that moving all their stuff here?
Yeah.
When they said they were all going to leave?
Yeah.
I remember there was that picture of all the car companies had all their logos, yeah, had crosses over them because they were all going to leave. I'd like to see how that picture looks now.
Yeah.
No, exactly. And what's encouraging, the fact that this is focused on manufacturing, which over the past few decades, it's been on a downward spiral continually.
Yeah.
So the fact that despite everything that's going on, it's actually bouncing back so robustly. And a lot of it now is kind of high-tech manufacturing as well. It's not kind of low-tech, low wages sort of.
So is this like the new version of British Steel then? Is this our next global thing, like high-tech manufacturing?
Yeah, exactly. Because we can't compete with the low-cost, low-tech industries against the likes of China and wherever. So there has been a refocus. It's like, well, okay, where can we compete? Where is our expertise?
I mean, we're great at finance, we're great at services and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And tech. Yeah.
And now, this as well.
But even financial services-wise, I mean, finance-wise, there are a lot of banks that we're talking about pulling out, and it hasn't come into fruition.
I think we covered it in the past, but it's like, why would you ever move to Frankfurt?
Yeah.
I mean, anyone who's been
there,
it's boring. But also, I remember I had some times around near the red light district there at the train station. Honestly, I've never seen anything like it. People injecting heroin on the streets, having sex on the streets.
You said it was the best 10 euros you ever spent.
Yeah.
Well, funny enough, carrying on from that, the UK has retained its position as Europe's most attractive destination for financial services investment. And London has also maintained its place as the leading European city, with over half of global investors surveyed saying that they plan to establish or extend operations in the UK over the next year.
Wow, so it's... I mean, I even saw Lord Adonis...
I was literally about to say, what do you say to that, Adonis? He
put a tweet out a few days ago going, we now know that Brexit was the worst thing we've ever done.
It's according like, to
what
who?
What are you on about?
According
what
to...
What metric is he measuring that by?
It's like, if we just say some things, then that's the truth. It's not how it works.
Well, a sign of how desperate they are. Did you see that headline the week that... because of Brexit, it may disrupt pigeon racing because pigeons won't be allowed to fly to France without a certificate.
They're really
clutching
your
straws now.
And it's
like, really, that is your big argument now for against Brexit.
I mean, I think the metric that someone like Adonis is using is the fact that Europe have opened up internally without passports for travel during this crisis. And they've basically done exactly what Europe have done all along and said, no, England, we're going to fuck you over because you did Brexit. Well, that's what I think is going on. I mean, Merkel's trying to keep all British people out of Germany at the moment, even though she's coming over here next week.
Well, it's ironic that she's coming over here, but also we were looking at the stats for June, and Germany's death rate from COVID in June is 8 times the UK's death rate.
Mm.
So it's like, well, why are we banned?
What, is that 8 people dying then?
But these threats don't seem to last for very long, though. They seem to be relatively idle threats because they can't afford to not have us, certainly, in certain parts of Europe.
But also, it's broken down already because the sort of leaders of Spain and Greece have already said, no, Brits are
welcome.
Please
come back.
Yeah, exactly. We're desperate.
You know, so, certainly in Portugal as well, yeah.
Then going on from all this, the Institute of Directors Confidence Tracker has reached its highest level since the survey was first introduced, with business chiefs planning to ramp up investment and hiring over the next 12 months. So more good news there.
Yeah.
And then, don't know if you saw this, apparently Brussels are planning to cut the amount of British TV shown on the continent. A leaked EU document described British dominance on TV as a threat to Europe's cultural diversity. I mean, they really are paranoid,
aren't
they?
French comedy is so popular, isn't it?
Well, I was going to say, how will the French survive without their fix of allo allo?
Ooh, my little tent. In fact, funnily enough, people were saying memes of Matt Hancock because he does actually look like Gruber. Yeah, the camp. My little
camp
tank.
Commandant.
Is there a second, really?
There's a last sort of thing vaguely related to FUEU. I don't know if you all remember the lovely Emily Thornberry. So somehow she's ended up as Labour's shadow trade secretary. I mean, I remember her partly as being a rabid Remainer and also slagging off
England
people,
flags.
Yeah, people were flying England flags. Mm. Bearing in mind she represents Labour, who are meant to be in favour of the working man. Anyway, so during the Brexit debates, she was constantly bemoaning that by leaving the EU, we would lose tariff-free trade. So it's interesting that when Liz Truss announced the new trade deal with Australia, she lamented the removal of tariffs to trade. So does she not believe in tariff-free trade with the rest of the world? It's just bonkers.
Crackers.
The fact that they don't see how ridiculous they're being.
Funny enough, we were saying last week about us joining the TTPI or whatever it is.
TCTTP
or whatever. Yeah, whatever. It's actually come up in the papers now that the government at the moment, I know they're fucking up everything else at the moment. When it comes to this, they're hitting the nail on the head. And they've already said that if this happens, we're going to use that as a staging post to go between those countries and the USA.
Yeah.
It's going to be massive when that comes in.
There is so much potential here, isn't there?
Yeah.
And we're already seeing the fruit. Well, we are starting to see the fruit. It was never, I always said that, I mean, I voted to leave as well, and I always said it's not going to happen at once, but I'm in this for the long term.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for a short fix, because that's not what this is, but it's a long term investment, and it can only go one way, which is positive, and we're already seeing that happen now.
Another thing that really irritates me about, I mean, I know the Remainers have got a hell of a lot of things that they always say and always go on, is that the European Union has good food standards or something like that. We're not going to be abiding by them anymore. So, yeah, we can now set our own.
Yeah,
which might be more stringent or less.
Yeah, there was also that argument against us. There was also that argument they tried to put that, you know, about we're going to lose the European Court of Human Rights, as if we didn't have any human rights here before that. I mean, we've been one of the most tolerant countries
that invented democracy, pretty much.
Yeah, and basically gave democracy. It to the Western world for the most part. And the only country in Europe that hasn't been under a totalitarian government until now.
Until recently.
Until recently.
Yeah, we can't say that anymore.
No, I know.
Yeah.
But, you know, the point still stands, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you see the interview with the Extinction Rebellion guy?
Well, funny enough, I was going to say that.
No,
yeah,
it was so funny.
That's Roger Hallam, wasn't it? He asked him why in all of Extinction Rebellion's literature, the website and campaigns, they don't mention China once in any of it. And he said, even though they produce 27% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions.
Well,
it's all about starting at home.
He said at one point...
Because it's an easy target here, but, I mean, it's mad, isn't it?
Well, and also, you know, you can get away with pissing people off here, where if you try to do any of their tricks in the middle of Beijing,
you're not going to strike on one.
They're basing their climate change analysis on the worst-case scenario, which is all of us having our power going back to coal stations, which isn't going to happen.
The world's going to end, doommongers, because it's always going to end in 10, 15 years, and it never, ever happens. But what's kind of scary is that kids...
How dare you? You've stolen my life.
My cousin's son, he's 14, I think, 13, 14, and on Instagram he put up this post about the world's going to end, you know, it's going to end in 30 years unless we do something about it. And I thought, it's worrying to see that from kids. He's got no basis. I'm not blaming him. It's not his fault, but it's just scary how these kids are really being influenced by this sort of thing now.
Yeah.
Another thing that concerns me about bringing kids into the world these days. But...
Well, yeah, I know. That's a whole different conversation, but we digress.
We do.
As usual.
Sorry, yeah.
Yes.
So I was talking about GB News, and it was going to be a segue to Stop Funding Hate, which I think maybe you've got a little bit on, Dom.
It's just a very extended segue. Yeah, just really kind of pissed off with the whole Stop Funding Hate thing. The fact that they're trying to coerce and bully companies to pull their adverts on GB News.
Yes.
And the fact that Stop Funding Hate is probably the most inappropriate name for their campaigns. If you read many of their tweets and messages, they contain appalling abuse of individuals and organisations.
Yeah.
And it's like, do you not see the sort of schizophrenic nature of what you're campaigning for and what you're actually producing in your own name?
I think the issue is their definition of hate is completely subjective regardless, but their definition of hate is anyone who doesn't agree with their, let's face it, quite far left agenda.
Yeah,
it's as simple as that. I mean, they said that they targeted GB News, four or five months before they'd even launched, and it was just because it was preempting what the content would be. That's just insane.
Yeah, to censor something before it's even happened.
But the one thing is that a lot of the thing they're aiming at with this hate thing is, let's face it, racism. But so far on GB News, I've seen a really good, diverse mixture of people who are on there with great opinions, all intelligent, well debated. What is there to hate rather than the fact that some of the output is a bit shonky?
They never define it because they can't, because it's a broad brush. I mean, the term racist, unfortunately, now has been completely devalued. It doesn't mean anything. Same with Nazi. These are two terms that should mean something, and they unfortunately have lost that.
But also, they just used to shut down debate.
Yeah.
Let's look on the bright side. They've said to everyone to boycott the businesses that are funding GB News, which means that everyone who follows Stop Funding Hate Now can't use Amazon Prime. which, if you ask me, they probably still do.
How many of them do you think? Yeah, exactly.
Who's not going to use Amazon Prime?
It's the typical champagne socialist type of thing, isn't it? You know, it's one wall for thee, but not for me, but not for thee.
Yeah, but I found it was worrying how easily cowed many of these large organisations
were. Andrew Neil came out, though, all guns blazing, didn't he?
Well, yeah, and I thought there was one line he came out with. He's when he accused them of being the useful idiot of bigots bent on censorship.
Yeah.
And it's exactly right. And there does seem to be a lot of those companies seem to have already backtracked now. suddenly like, oh, well, actually, we didn't.
Well, Copperberg, we're like, we can have a look at their output. It's like, well, I tell you what, Copperberg, just stop making a drink because it's fucking horrible. Yeah. It's shit.
Strawberry cider.
Strawberry cider. The only people who drink that are kids who are fucked in the head. Another one of the drinks was Grolsch. I mean, there's not one alcoholic drink that stopped funding hate that I like.
Why don't they ask to sit down with Andrew Neil?
Because they know they haven't got an argument.
He said to them, come in, yeah, talk to us about why you don't want to fund it.
When do you ever see people from that far left side, though, ever actually engage in a debate? They can't. And that's why I was nowhere on the right side of this.
And that's what this is about. It's about shutting down debate. It's like, what we think is right, fuck the rest of you.
Yeah, exactly that.
So debates are important. We need someone to run those debates to make sure that everything's going smoothly. Thankfully, Lindsay Hoyle's in the position at the moment, doing a great job down as Speaker of the House.
I've got a lot of time for him. Yeah.
I do love the way he always sounds like he's doing a talk show. He's like, now we're going to go up to Shropshire.
Yeah.
But Mr. Burko's still floating around like a big fat-headed toad. What's going on with Burko at the moment?
Yeah, well, the whole little turd. You've probably seen in the news that he's now joined the Labour Party, primarily because he's still desperate to get a peerage. Well,
the funny thing is, I kind of thought it was in the Labour Party anyway, way he's been holding debates in
the past. Well, he definitely was.
Labour have announced they wouldn't give him a peerage, was that right?
They're saying they're not going to, but let's face it, it'll probably fall out of the news and it'll just quietly happen anyway.
Well, yeah, so the moment, he's the only ex-speaker who's not been given a peerage in the history of Parliament.
Well, quite rightly. He tried to use parliamentary protocol to overturn the biggest democratic mandate this country's had.
Yeah, it's outrageous how he's allowed to manipulate things. But what I found probably the saddest thing of all was that when he stepped down from being Speaker, he wrote to Jeremy Corbyn asking Corbyn if he would support his peerage, and actually enclosed his own letter of recommendation to get a peerage for Corbyn to sign. And Corbyn went, no, fuck off. So Corbyn finally got something right. Desperate are you? Yeah. We can't finish talking about Burko without one of my all-time favourite stories of him. Back in about, I think it was 2010, the then Health Minister Simon Burns backed his ministerial car into Burko's official limo. Burko confronted Burns, shouting, "I'm not happy," to which he replied, "Well, which one of the seven are you then?" And apparently he then had to apologise in Parliament for it.
That is good.
Worth it, well worth it.
Oh, yeah, I thought that is sharp.
So, yeah, Burko, wanker. Yes. Still a wanker. Trying to get in through the back door of a party full of wankers.
Yeah.
To be a peer in a house that's full of old wankers.
They're more than welcome to him, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think he would fit seamlessly with them.
He would. What's it gonna take? What can I do? I'll even stick it in Jeremy Corbyn's goo. I want a peerage now. I want it, it's true. So please give me a peerage. I've been good to you. I'm sorry, comrade. I must speak to Keir. Keir Starmer holds all the power around here. But be Berger pro remain, you will have no fear. Oh, and what's your thoughts on Palestine, the most important thing around here? So, I hope you're enjoying the podcast at the moment. We have gone a little bit mental when it comes to sweariness this time round, but hey, there we go. I hope that doesn't affect some of the fantastic reviews that we've been getting on iTunes. This one from Dysan314. I've been listening to this podcast since it's been going, and it gives you a balanced opinion of what is actually going on in a world with accurate facts that might not necessarily be given in by the media or the government. It brings nuance to a ludicrous time. Alison Lockdown Skeptic 1968 was referring to our interview with Gary Sidley last week and said, "This very sensitive interview just hits the nail on the head around the disgraceful fear-mongering our government and the shameless MSM have inflicted on our country. Let this fire your resistance and quiet revolt against the Tory tyranny." And Bishy1401 said, "Thankfully you're back. Helps me get through the nights on the motorway knowing that there are still some of us who do want to go back to normality. Keep spreading the word, guys." We also did get a few emails this week, but they're really, really long, so I'll be reading those out next week. If you want to send us an email, you can do to therealnormalpodcast@gmail.com. Also, it'd be so helpful if you could leave us a review on iTunes. It spreads the words of anti-lockdown, more nuanced approach to this problem. You can also follow us over on Twitter @realnormalpod, or follow us on our Reddit page as well. I'll leave links to all of those in the description of this podcast below. So anyway, let's get on with the podcast. Can I hear a GDR music being faded in? Ah, oh, must be Angela Merkel's bit. There we go. I'm trying to think if I can find any GDR music.
Or maybe just sort of Flight of the Valkyries or something like that.
Put the USSR theme in.
Back
you,
in the USSR by the Beatles.
Oh,
it's a good tune. Double White, best album. Anyway, Angela Merkel.
Yes, there's only a very brief bit about this, primarily because I wanted to shoehorn in something quite funny.
Is a Merkel a female? That's a Merkin.
Merkin,
sorry.
Pubic yeah. wig, that's yeah. what
a pubic wig.
So I hear.
Lift it up, find Matt Hancock.
But you don't lift it up and find a cock, anyway. Remember that time?
Sorry, mate, trans rights, yeah?
Yes, so this is all very convoluted way of saying that Merkel's coming to London next week for a meeting with Boris, so it'd be interesting to see what comes out of that discussion. But the main reason I'm mentioning it is that I wonder if Private Eye will rerun their front cover from one of her previous visits. She was pictured at customs with the question, anything to declare, and her reply was, not war this time.
That is quite good, isn't it?
That's good.
That is good. Is that it? Is that what you've got on it?
Yes,
fucking hell.
That's well worth it,
so,
wasn't it?
Just for the listeners out there, we always have a little bit of a plan beforehand on our little WhatsApp group and everything. And Don said, oh, yeah, I've got a little bit on Merkel. And I was thinking, oh, he's going to be talking about policies or something like that she's going to talk about when she comes over here. No, it was just a segue to have an anecdote about something funny she said a couple of years ago.
Well, to combine on her, what about Macron getting slapped in the face the other week? That was very satisfying. For
yeah.
me.
Although
wasn't it?
The bloke got put away for several months, didn't he?
No.
Yeah, he did, yeah. It's France, isn't it?
It's so like, it's like when Prescott, when he
punched,
levelled out.
That was quite good, wasn't it?
I mean, like, proper. You know what?
That was great.
Whatever you think about John Prescott, if someone does that to you, but Farage got milked, didn't he?
Just, yeah, yeah.
You know,
he got the. That's another whole image.
Someone parked a cow over him.
It's like an Alan Partridge. I'm stuck under a cow.
Yeah, when I say he got milked, he got covered in milk.
Milkshake.
But milkshake. What other politicians would you like to have? Like, not suffer physical harm, but, you know, maybe a nipple cripple, something like that, you know. That
custard
sort of
pie.
Thing. Yeah, custard
something
pie.
Something cheeky but stern.
Yeah, know. Cheeky but stern. Yeah, what would you do to Matt Hancock? I think from now on they should insist that he wears the same clothes as Edmund Blackadder in Blackadder 2, where you've got the big codpiece. So they'll see him. Ooh, here comes Matt. His staff would like it. Sure. Is he short-staffed at the moment, Don? We've got some staffing issues as well, haven't we? In a bit of furlough.
Oh, your segues are getting worse and worse.
I know. I've put my crowbar back now. In the box.
I just want to talk a little bit about furloughs and staff shortages. So I can't be the only one who's nonplussed by the contradiction of paying over 2 million people to stay at home on furlough, whilst thriving businesses are complaining about staff shortages. And there's also over 750,000 job vacancies being advertised. Well, the problem is, I mean, we're in danger of paying people to stay at home whose jobs probably no longer exist, whilst at the same time risking successful businesses contracting or collapsing through lack of staff. Yeah.
To be fair, I'm sure a big portion of that, or a fair portion of those, are people in the aviation industry who are obviously still held to, and possibly hospitality to a degree, but that wouldn't cover everyone, I wouldn't have thought. I
mean, there were some hospitality places that were going to start paying people, what was it, £500 if they stayed for 4 weeks?
Oh, God, yeah,
or
I
longer,
saw that, yeah.
Something like that. So there's just problems across the board, I think, and that's what happens when government goes in there and ruins how business naturally happens, the flow of business and people being employed and the economy.
Yeah, and I don't understand when it became apparent this was an issue, even if they wanted to kind of stick with furlough to the bitter end of September, to say to people, well, OK, we'll only continue to pay furlough, as if, while you're meant to be at home, you now fill in short-term some of these vacancies.
Oh, yeah.
If anyone's interested, the furlough bill up to the end of May is now standing at over £60 billion, and there's another four months still to add. And because, unlike Sage, we like to put things in perspective, furlough will cost more than our annual education budget.
Funny enough, actually, I was looking at a couple of things. Like, we spent £320 million telling everyone that, you know, they're all going to die.
Yeah. But have you noticed how Rishi Sunak's essentially been pushed out of... he's almost just sidelined, isn't he? And I think he's raised a lot of concerns consistently, and he's just been essentially ignored, I think, and pushed aside by Boris, but in replacement of Sage, it seems to be that way.
Well, funny enough, the only time I've heard anything from him for ages was when he was interviewed by Andrew Neil.
Yeah.
Andrew Neil got him sort of to a point where he couldn't explain...
anything.
anything, yeah.
Right. Well, just looking at those figures there, apparently, I mean, this is quite a contentious thing because so many different factors go into into it, but a hospital bed costs on average something like £400 a day to run, and I imagine that includes nurses and that. I imagine if it's a different type of bed, like, you know, ICU, and that's going to cost more. But I thought, how could we better spend money? Rather than trying to stop people getting this disease, why don't we start spending money on helping people who do get it?
Yeah.
So I thought what I'd do is have a quick look at bed occupancy, how many beds are available before the pandemic, and what they're like currently. So before, this is January to March 2019, there were 129,992 beds, and there was an average occupancy of 89.1%. So, you know, pretty high, running at nearly 90% occupancy. Mm-hmm. In A&E, that there was 919 people using beds through that period, okay? So now, January to March 2021, there's now only 122,312 beds, so that's a contraction of nearly 7,000 beds. Average occupancy of 80.9%. It's gone down almost 10%, the average occupancy. That's 98,000 beds, whereas before it was 115,000 occupied. No wonder the NHS are loving it. And in A&E, only 553 people. There were slightly more in critical care at that point, but what I'm trying to say is that they've got rid of beds because they're trying to space them out more, aren't they, so they can control this. We're getting rid of beds. The occupancy is down. We're protecting the NHS because that's all we're here for now. We're just mindless drones. Let us free.
And it's you know, it's not like we don't pay for the NHS. It's free, isn't it?
I love it when people say it's free.
Oh, it drives me mad.
It's like, no, it's not free. I'm
paying shitloads.
You know, I take my hat off to anyone who goes into the nursing or becomes a doctor. I couldn't do it. Mm. But at the same time, you know, these people aren't forced into this job. You make the decision to go into it. And the same with, like, a police officer can't choose the crimes they police. A nurse and a doctor can't choose the infections they treat.
Yeah.
It's not like you go in. It's a risk, a job which comes with some risk. And it's become the COVID, National COVID Service rather than the NHS, National Health
not
Service.
Just that, it's religion, and it's very difficult to reform. You can't reform religions,
can you? Say anything negative about the NHS or anyone who works.
No. I'm sorry, the only way the NHS will ever get better is if you say things negative about it, so you can fix those negatives.
When's it ever been a mate or been efficient and really good, though? It never has been. It doesn't matter how much money you put into it, there's wastage because there's no checks and very few checks and balances in order to call people to account. A lack of accountability.
Well, multi-tiered management. Money just disappears.
It's almost impossible to sack people if they're underachieving. So it's not a. I'm all personally all for a privatised model, some kind of privatised model which actually allows people to be held to account. You know, a real free market system.
Targets that result in if you don't reach KPIs or whatever they're going to be called. There's a repercussion for
but
that.
I've said to people, you know, what do the government do well? The answer is very little. So why on earth would we let them run our healthcare, which arguably is the most important thing to us?
I mean,
I could go on for hours about this.
Let's face it. I mean, nationalisation at every aspect of life always results in a worse service. Look at the railways. Look at
British Leyland.
And the NHS, for some reason, is still nationalised. Guys, I think we're going to have to start wrapping up now. So firstly, in a minute, I'm going to ask you what your Keir Starmer question is going to be at PMQs. But before that, a bit of culture. So I've been reading... I'm going to start this week, just so you know. Have you got your culture, by the way?
Kind of. I might have to save it for if I'm invited back.
Oh, no, you better say it now.
Well, I'll let you think about it. Mine is, I've been reading a book called The Velvet Mafia, which is about, basically, they're predominantly gay managers of rock and roll music in the UK in the 1950s, 60s and 70s.
Like Brian Epstein and
All that. God, some of the work these lads did. Like, they pick up some, like, young talent, it was about 18. Apparently, they'd tour for something like a year, 2 years, with no days off. One of them, in the end, had a nervous breakdown, had to go to hospital, and were told that they have to rest completely for a month. These are young lads who are getting, you know, dragged around the country for all that sort of stuff. Right. Not my usual cup of tea, is it, for a book, because I tend to read sort of military history and communist stuff and all that sort of thing. That's kind of my interest. But nice to sort of dip into something a bit different, and it's nice to read about 1960s, 1950s UK.
It's nice to take a break from the politics and the madness
doom and
the
gloom.
Social world, isn't
well,
it?
Especially if you read communist history, I mean, everything's so prescient, it's like, oh, God. So, yeah. Don, what have you got? Because usually you'll say something and then say you hate it, so...
No, I'll normally comment on something you or Midge have recommended and say that I then hated it. Talk about the Euro football.
Oh,
it was on television, wasn't it?
Fucking snooze fest.
But there's two things. One, I found it hilarious, the coverage of the mighty, plucky, brilliant Scotland. All the gushing coverage of like how fantastic they were, how hard they tried, how proud everyone was, this, that and the other, going on and on and
but
on.
But they came fourth.
Well,
it's virtually impossible to not go through the group stages.
Well, even to the extent
we get through, don't we?
The final game, when we've topped the table and Scotland finished bottom... the BBC led with Scotland in the Euros. And there was a brilliant phone call to Five Live where someone phoned in. It was like, I don't know if I've fallen asleep for 2 weeks and Scotland have won the Euros. He said, but last time I looked, they're bottom of the table. We've got 1 point and one goal. And it's like, yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, what I particularly liked is all the games being held at in Budapest, where completely
full crowds.
Capacity crowds, no masks, no social distance, everyone rammed in. And I looked, and like, so the Euros started 15 days ago. And they normally reckon it's 2 weeks for, like, all the stats to start filtering through on infections, this, that and the other. So I had a look yesterday in Hungary, country of 10 million people. They had 66 positive cases of COVID.
Yeah. I mean, let's remember as well, these are positive cases. They're not actually ill,
which is still redundant, a redundant way of looking at
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And I don't know if you've also heard, it's in the news today, that kids now at school are using apple juice to get false positives so they don't have to go to school.
No.
Seriously. They'd get apple juice, rub it on the lateral flow test, and it comes back positive.
Because they're that accurate, aren't they?
Yeah. but apparently schools have had to send emails out to parents saying, can you watch your children when they do a lateral flow test, because they keep doing it and bunking off school.
Kids are great, aren't they?
It's great, isn't it? I mean, they really...
I can't believe it took them that long to suss it.
Wonder who was the Einstein that actually worked that out?
Sort of all in science class. Like, we've got 100 things here. Something must trigger it.
In terms of... I've come quite unprepared as well, to be honest. I might...
You can't say Alan Partridge, can't say Hello, Hello.
Well, in terms of a good book to read, is that a good starting point?
Yeah.
Maybe? So it's a bit depressing, but I think it falls in line with, well, the psychological part of COVID. There's a book called The Ordinary Men by Browning, and it's a book basically about these German police officers that were sent to Poland during the war.
Or you sent me a link to that, didn't
you?
Yeah.
It's really... I found it through Jordan Peterson, because he uses it as an example, and it's really interesting. It's basically how these ordinary men, and these are guys who weren't... They weren't like kids during the 20s and 30s in Germany who were part of the indoctrination. They were past the age of 22, which Peterson says is when you're sort of not as susceptible to indoctrination.
Yeah.
And they kind of went through that process of you know, the Nazis coming to power, but they weren't that age. Anyway, they were shipped to Poland to basically police the transportation of Jews out of Poland to the death camps. And these guys went from being just out, you know, very old bankers, you know, shopkeepers, to basically going out into the fields and shooting pregnant women in the back of the head.
It's a
deeply dark read, but it just showed the whole... And what they were given every opportunity to actually leave.
They weren't forced to do it.
No, but they didn't want to leave because of the sense of camera. They felt they were letting their other police officers, the other people in their team down. And it's all about the psychological effects of how people...
are made.
How anyone can become a monster.
Well,
I think that ties in, interestingly, with what we're seeing at the moment. With
there
the
was that experiment, thing, wasn't there, when they did in America, where
the Milgram experiment.
Electrocuting people. So the person would pretend they were getting electrocuted...
And they
twisted it up and up and up. And in the end, they were giving people lethal amounts.
They didn't give a shit.
It was all because someone in a white coat was telling them to do it.
It
was all about how authority... And that, I think, it's well worth a read. It's dark, but it's really good. But it's definitely... it just shows... I mean, we've seen this, haven't we, with COVID?
Well, funny enough, just thinking about the sphere of history you're looking at, and also geographically, I don't know if you've heard an author called Timothy Snyder, who did a book called Bloodlands, which is all about the Treblinka and Sobibor and all these places where Jews were slaughtered in World War II. He's come out in an interview on Channel 4 saying that what you're seeing now is effectively dictatorial propaganda for this disease.
But the problem is so few people really know their history, and I think that doesn't help at all. I mean, what is it? You're destined to repeat history if you don't learn the lessons from it. And I think we've seen that for sure. I mean, just the idea of when the government have given people essentially recently, the last year, the green light to vilify people who don't think in the same way.
Yeah.
And that's very, very dangerous.
Who haven't had a medical intervention. And effectively physically then different.
Which is
what we're looking at.
Which is really not a good
place
to be.
So. Let's not end on a downer.
No, sorry to bring it down a little bit.
Yeah. I'm going to put my best Lindsay Hoyle on now. Here we go. And now we'll go to the leader of the opposition, Keir Starmer.
Who?
Fucking wanker. Don, you're Keir Starmer for one question. What do you ask Boris next Wednesday?
Why don't you just reopen everything?
You're not even going to ask him anything about Hancock. That's easy for Boris. That's an easy deflection. Laurie, what you got?
I think I'd have to, at the current time, question him on again, run through Hancock's misgivings.
Say it. Say it like you would if you're Keir Starmer.
Oh, God, OK. Please explain to me why the Health Secretary has still got a job, considering the fact that he's broken the rules that he put into law, and combined with numerous conflicts of interest that we've seen over the year that have been swept under the rug.
See, I'm going to go for Keir Starmer just playing a very simple one-line question that has multiple connotations. What are the qualifications required for someone to be employed as an advisor to the Health Secretary?
That's a good one. That's very good, yeah.
Something like that. Okay, guys, look, thanks ever so much for listening this week. I know it's been a bit of a ramble, but it doesn't matter. We're hitting our straps yet again, back again. Hopefully Midge will be back next week following his cream use and the end of his crabs. And I'm sure, well, let us know what you think about Laurie as well. Let us know. He's named Laurie now. We call him Laurie.
Be kind.
You can send us an email to therealnormalpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us over on Twitter at Real Normal Pod. You can get our Reddit as well. And we'll see you next week, where we'll be recording from the coastline of Suffolk.
Yes, we will.
So we'll be sat there.
Nice pint of Adnams.
Chewing on whelks, which is something I'm sure Matt Hancock would like to do. the amount of innuendo in this week's podcast has been ridiculous.
Too easy.
Thanks ever so much for listening. Speak to you soon. Love you all. Goodbye.